Alright, so basically it's just one sentence. One sentence in my Bible. And so one sentence with two phrases, so we're going to break it up into two parts. And so the first one, keep fervent in your love. Okay? There are other Bible translations that I have come to know, which translates this as love each other deeply. And it kind of pains me and humbles me to say this, but I kind of like that phrase better than what the NASB has, because the NASB says keep fervent in your love. And for most 21st century Americans, we don't, that's not a word that you kind of use on an everyday, regular basis. At least in comparison to a phrase like love each other deeply. You know, we kind of, when you hear love deeply, that resonates, you know, that, and that sticks, and that clicks really, really easily and quickly, a lot more quicker than fervent. You know, like if I went up to someone, I was like, "Son, I love you fervently." I think someone would say, "Okay," or maybe "Thanks."
I don't know what it means.
But then someone would be like, "I don't know what that means," right? And so I know for myself, if someone said that to me, if Nathan came up to me and said, "Hey, I love you fervently," I'd be like, "What are you trying to say?" Okay. Whereas Nathan came up to me and said, "I love you deeply," I'd be like, "What are you trying to say?" Okay. Anyway, but you know, I the second scenario, I still understand better. Anyway, with that being said, the idea that Peter's trying to convey is deep love. Okay, deep, sustaining, long-term love that is not easily swayed or changed or challenged. Okay, it's very simple, very self-explanatory. And so here we are reminded once again, Peter has talked about loving each other before in a previous chapter, but he brings it back up as a reminder to tell us that as the people of God, we are commanded by God to love one another. Period. Okay. We know that in Matthew 22:37-39, the whole law of God is summarized in two commands, which is love God, love people. Okay, and I would even argue that without separated from the love of God, we can't really love people. Okay, and so our love for people is grounded on and is dependent on love for God. And that in it, even that itself is kind of deeper than just the simple us loving God, because we can't love God on our own. We must first receive love from God, okay, and then we can love God back. And then the third step, the next step would be, then we can love other people, okay. And so Peter is saying here that reminder of that command that he said before, and it's also found elsewhere in the Bible, and it's a command that he would have heard from Christ when Jesus was running around, and Peter would have been in the crowd, and he would have heard Christ say, the law of God is two things: love God, love people. Okay, and so we are commanded by God to love one another deeply, because we have been so deeply loved by God. Okay, so Peter is, he doesn't say the first part, okay, because he's assuming that by just saying the second part that you're going to make that connection. Okay, because he's, again, he's writing to believers. He's not writing to just everyday Joe Schmo off the street. Okay, because then it can get all weird. But he is writing to the church. Okay, and so within the church, when we are commanded to love, okay, the assumption is that the source of our love is God. And so to kind of break it down easily. It's we are commanded to love one another, and we can love one another mainly because we have first been loved by God. One scholar makes this comment about this passage and says this, love is capable of being commanded because it's not primarily an emotion, but a decision of the will leading to action. Love is capable of being commanded because it is not primarily an emotion, but a decision of the will leading to action. Okay. And so Peter here is not saying, just have warm feelings for one another. Okay. But understand that you have been loved by God, and because of that fact, then love one another actively. Show love to one another. Okay. And so that leads to the second lesson, the second thing that we want to see, which is the second phrase of the verse. Love covers a multitude of sins. Okay, so that phrase can get a little dicey. I'm starting to, there have been times in the study of Peter where I'm like, man, maybe I shouldn't have chosen this book because there's so many tricky passages. Okay, love covers many sins. Well, Peter is making a kind of a reference back to Proverbs chapter 10, verse 12. Where I think Proverbs 10:12 says love covers many wrongs, or something like that, multitude of wrongs, depending on your translation. And then we also see a similar reference in the book of James. And so all that means that in the first century church, that it must have been a phrase or a lesson that has been, that was circulating within the churches. Now, that being said, now we have to deal with what it means, okay? There are many different interpretations or understandings of this phrase, but at least for us in our time here and in this context of going over the entire book of Peter, it seems to us most, or it fits best, the interpretation that says that love covers a multitude of sins concerns us and our relationship with one another. Meaning that when we sin against one another, we forgive. Okay? Meaning this, some has been forgiven by God. Okay? And in the first part, it was we talked about loving each other deeply, right? And so the way we show love, the way we show deep love for one another is to show forgiveness to each other. Okay. And so when Nathan sins against, not if, but when Nathan sins against Sung doesn't automatically practice justice. Okay, but Sung forgives. Okay, Sung forgives. And this idea is not something that's revolutionary or something unique to Peter. In Matthew 18:21-35, Jesus tells us parable of this dude who borrowed a lot of money. Okay, and it's kind of like, I'm gonna use a reference to this book I read, this amazing book called What's So Amazing About Grace by Philip Yancey. Some people hate it, but some people like it. I really like it. Okay, because the book is literally just, you know, just explaining what grace looks like. Okay, and he has this, I think he uses the same kind of passage in Matthew 18, but he gives a real everyday modern day example of it. So what happened was, this guy, he wanted to organize like a trip, like a tour of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Okay, And so, obviously, he can't see, you can't go and see all of them because a lot of it is all busted up and lost or whatever. But he wanted to organize a tour that covers all those things. You know, like you go to Egypt, you look at the pyramids, and stuff like that. And you go to different places in Iraq and the Middle East, look at the different places where people think these things stood once. So he came up with the idea, lined up guides, like tour guides, lined up the airlines, lined up buses, okay? And then he presented the idea to a bunch of investors, and there's one, I think he got one investor, got really interested in it, and the guy went all in, like, let's do this, you know, let's make it happen. And the problem was, he came up with this idea in 1991. Some of you guys will be kind of like, what happened in 91? I think it was 91. But the older folks in the room will remember that was the first Iraqi war with the U.S. where we went after Saddam. Okay? Saddam. Okay? And and it was not George W., it was Bush Senior.
H.W.
Yeah, it was Bush Senior that went the first Iraqi war. And so what happens usually in time of war, like if we went to a war with Iraq, the U.S. State Department cancels all travel to that country because we're fighting a war with them. You know, it kind of makes sense. And so this guy, he had all his money, he put it all in, and then he, overnight, he lost it. And so this guy is faced with this crazy scenario where he's like, oh man, I just blew like $1 million. That was a pretty good chunk of change. The book didn't say exactly how much it was, but it was a pretty good chunk of change. And so the next day, he has to go to the investor and say, I just lost all your money, sorry. And he stays up all night the night before, coming up with like crazy like payment plans, like I'll pay you like $1,000 a month for the rest of my life kind of thing, you know. And he calculates, I think the guy calculates like how many years he has to live and stuff like that, or how many years he expects to live, and he still can't pay it all back. Anyway, so he goes, he's really tired and really scared and nervous and all that stuff, and he goes to the building, waits for the guy. Obviously, like in all the movies, he's in the room and the investor is busy, so the secretary just makes him wait in the office. And then the guy comes in, and before he even says anything, the guy stands up and he does this whole spiel like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, blah, blah. I'll come up with this crazy payment plan and stuff like that. And then the investor just smiles and looks at him and goes, check this out, man. I'm an investor. Sometimes the stuff that I invest in does really well. But I understand I'm an investor, so sometimes it doesn't go so well. This payment plan is ridiculous. Don't you worry about it. And with that sentence, he's scot-free. The guy with the crazy idea has zero debts. He is absolutely debt-free. Okay? And Jesus talks about that. Right? Like, he has a similar parable. Like, this guy, he owed a lot of money, and then he got off. And then, as he's walking out of the building, he meets a buddy who owes him $50. He's like, hey man, where's my $50? He's like, here's the 20, I'll get you the 30 in a week. Like, what? What are you talking about? Okay? And the back in the day, the way this judicial system worked was that if someone owed you money, you can actually take them to court and throw them in jail. Okay? And this is what this guy does in Matthew 18. And Jesus makes the point that if you have truly received grace and you understand the love that you've been given, then you can't help but to turn and give that love back. You know, this is why the law of God and the Christian life is designed the way it is. The Christian life is primarily about love. It's not about do. It's about love. And so, and the Christian life is firstly not love, but firstly receive love, so that you can love. Okay, because humans, the Bible says we are designed by God to receive God's love, primarily. That's our primary function. So when we don't have that, then what we do is we try to go out and looking for other substitutes. And what I learned from life is substitutes, they're never quite the same as the real thing. Splenda is not sugar. Okay? Sweet and Lou is not sugar. Okay? Okay? For some of us, like some would probably appreciate this, right? In the 90s, there was a lot of fake stuff going around, especially out of New York. Okay? And so, and also from Korea. And so, there was a story about my friend, he went to Korea for a visit, and we told him, hey, when you go to Korea, find the fakest thing you can find and bring it back. And he came back, and he opened it up. It had a legit Nike box, shoe box. And we opened it up. It looks like regular Jordans. Right? Until you turn it to the other side. And the Nike swoosh had a double tail. And we're like, oh! It's not Nike, it's Nike. Okay? It's not Nike, it's Nike. It's not Michael Jordan, it's Michelle Jordan's. Okay? It's not the right, it's not the real thing. Right? It's the same way. We're designed for God's love. And if we don't get that, then we try to fill it up with superficial and not so good imitations. Okay? And so Peter says, hey, love covers multitude of sins. Love covers many sins. Why? Some can forgive Nathan because, like that guy with the idea of the trip, he owed this investor much, but he was forgiven much. And so it makes sense that some, in turn, when he is given that debt of sin, lets it go and gives that grace to another. And so that is how we show deep love to one another. You know, in the church we need to really practice forgiveness for real. Where I stand in terms of the church and the position that I have, I hear about so many different things and different drama that goes on. A lot of it, if not all of it, can be squashed if people learn how to forgive one another. You know? Now, there will be instances where, like, Sylvia wants to forgive Nathan, but Nathan is still like, ah, I don't need your forgiveness, okay? That's on him, not on you, okay? But as much as we can, Paul says that too, as much as we can, you try to live in peace with people. And that means when stuff happens, when drama happens, because we have been forgiven so much of our drama against God, we forgive the drama that people cause against us. Okay? That's how we love. Let's pray.